The Committee of the Whole will come to order. Chairman Ilaway, you will be up. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to business entities. This bill was referred to Committee No. 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Gilmore, Ilaway, Martin, Meyer, Miller, Quarburg, Stepson, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, representing Ilaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Ilaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 18, Business Entities Revisions, do pass. And I'd like the good lady from District 28 to discuss the bill. Good representative.
Representative Quarburg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate File 18 is the result of an interim study committee by Joint Corporations Committee, and it cleans up some of our statutes regarding business entities. There are basically four key points to this bill as we go through it, and I'll recap them for you now, and then I'll walk you through the bill. Number one, the bill reduces the length of time a business can be delinquent. Number two, it creates criminal penalties for intentionally and willfully signing and providing false documents to the Secretary of State. Number three, it creates administrative provisions for failing to respond to a subpoena. And the fourth thing it does is it improves administrative provisions for not having a registered agent. So if you'll walk with me through the bill, pages 1 and 2, and I'm talking about 1727-102, that is the penalty for signing a false document. And that merely adds a new section there that says that a person commits an offense by intentionally and knowingly delivering a false document to the Secretary of State to be filed, and that it makes the offense a felony with punishment not exceeding a $2,000 fine and or 1 year in jail. Pages 2 through 5, which is your sections 1715-1112, that deals with limited liability companies, and those three pages provide for forfeiture of a franchise for filing a false document, for failing to make a legal response to a subpoena. It also for failure to file records to the registered agent, if you've provided fraudulent information or cannot be served at the address you've listed. It does, as you can see on page 3, lines 10 through 14, it removes the pre-publication requirement when your charter is forfeited. It does not remove the mailing. The document, your notice will be mailed to you, but what it does is it just says we don't have to publish it in the newspaper. It also allows, as page 3, starting on lines 22, it does allow you to reinstate during a 2-year window with a retroactive reinstatement date, and it also allows the Secretary of State to classify the limited liability company delinquent at the time that the notice of deficiency is at the time that they are notified. So 1715-1112, 2 to 5 deals with limited liability companies. The bottom of page 5 through 6, 17, 16, 14, 20, that deals with for-profit corporations. So if you will turn over to page 6, it provides for forfeiture of the franchise for filing false documents, for failing to make a legal response to a subpoena, and it also allows the Secretary of State to classify the corporation delinquent at the time it is notified of deficiency. Bottom of page 6 and 7, 17, 16, 14, 21, that also deals with for-profit corporations. And it, there again, it removes the pre-publication requirement when the charter is forfeited. In other words, it won't be published in the newspaper. Let's see, pages 8 and 9. If you'll turn over to page 8 and 9, that also deals with for-profit corporations, 1416, 1422. And this allows the Secretary of State to reinstate during a two-year window with a retroactive reinstatement date. We thought that was good business and was warranted. The rest of the bill, pages 9 through, actually pages 18, they do the same exact thing for the rest of our business entities as we did for the for-profit corporations. So the rest of it is very redundant. Let me walk you through them. Just let me see if I get my, okay, starting on page 9, 17, 16, 15, 30, 17, 16, 15, 31, those do the same exact things that we did for for-profit corporations, only that is the section of statute that deals with foreign for-profit corporations. And I remind you, a foreign corporation is one that just operates, they're organized outside the state, they're doing business in the state, they're domestic, are corporations and LLCs and everything that are right in the state of Wyoming. So we have business, obviously we have corporations that have their offices outside the state and they're called foreign. They're not like overseas, but they're just, and I just wanted to make sure you understood that. Okay, so then if you go over to pages 11, you get into sections 17, 19, 14, 20, and 17, 19, 14, 21. It's doing the same thing we did for the for-profits, only that those sections of law deal with non-profit corporations. What we did was we made every effort to go through and make our laws consistent throughout the business entity statutes. And I think that's, yes, 17, 19, 14, 22 is also nonprofits. 17, over on page 15, 17, 19, 15, 30, and you go over to page 16, 17, 19, 15, 31, that deals with foreign nonprofits. So we've basically made consistent our for-profit corporations, our foreign for-profit corporations, our nonprofit corporations, and our foreign nonprofit corporations. And then section 3 is the repealers that are necessary to make this bill conform with state statute. Section 4 is the effective date is January 1, 2009. And that date coincides with Senate File 26, which we have yet to hear in corporations. We'll be hearing that tomorrow. And that has to do with updating the statutes regarding registered agents. So if there are no other questions, I would stand for questions. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
As I understand, Section 112 on pages 2, 3, and 4, and 5, that relates to 17, 15, 112, which is the registered agent provisions. Failure to maintain registered agent or registered office or pay an annual fee with regard to a limited liability company. With the other Senate file that's out there with regard to registered agents, if a result of that bill is registered agents resigning and a limited liability company were not to have a registered agent, they would be deemed defunct. And I'm sorry to be just kind of thinking out loud here, but my question is on page 5, at the top, Romanet 3, it is in the, and this is when it can be deemed defunct. It is in the public interest and the limited liability company or any of its members, subparagraph C, cannot be served by either the Secretary of State or the registered agent at its address provided pursuant to this act. Typically when you're serving an LLC, you serve the Secretary of State or the registered agent, not the corporation at its principal place of business or its address provided in the act. Does this mean that if they don't have a registered agent, then and the Secretary of State tried to serve them with the notice provided in subsection A that's not in the bill but it's in the statute, is that what that refers to? I'm not certain there.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think the answer to that is 1715.110 requires a registered office to be maintained. And I think that means if it can't be served either on the registered agent or on the registered office.
Is there any further question or discussion? Representative Korber? No? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Illoway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 18 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 18 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 21. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 21, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yeagy, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 21 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good lady from House District 54, where we get a lot of the money in our state.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring the Senate File 21, which is the Hathaway Scholarship Program, and this proposal was brought to the Joint Education Committee by the Department of Education, the University, and the Community Colleges, and allows for the reinstatement of Hathaway scholarships that were lost due to the failure to meet the continuing eligibility requirements for satisfactory academic progress, GPA, and continuous enrollment. What we found was happening was, as many of you are aware, far too many of our high school seniors are graduating without the ability to handle college-level courses, and so they were having to take remedial courses, which, of course, cannot be used to calculate their enrollment status, and so they were losing their scholarship because of that. And this just allows a way, a path for them to regain that scholarship once that happens. And so for continuing eligibility, currently, you know, if part-time, they have to be enrolled for at least 6 semester hours, or if full-time, at least 12 semester hours. And for the performance and honor scholarships, a 2.5 GPA was required for opportunity and career. The lower two levels, a 2.25 GPA was required. And the continuous academic progress requires a student to maintain enrollment in at least 2 semesters in each successive academic year. And so This reinstatement for lost scholarships will be allowed for the first academic term following the academic term or summer school session in which eligibility requirements are reestablished by the student. In other words, if a student loses their eligibility because they had to, and many of them were counseled to do this by their college counselors, that they were in a class and they were in trouble, that rather than risk having a big dip in your GPA, it's better to get out now and get a remedial class. And, well, of course, when they did that, then they lost their eligibility because they didn't have the required hours to keep it. And so what this says is if that happens to you, you're going to have to go through one session, either a semester or a summer session on your own nickel, and reestablish your GPA and your hours. And as soon as you've done that for one session, then you can regain that Hathaway scholarship. So that's essentially what the bill does. And you can see where that language has been inserted on page 2, lines 12 through 17, where some language was taken out on page 3. Again, on page 4, new language, and on page 5, where it goes into what's necessary to attain that satisfactory academic progress and the cumulative grade point average, and the requirements in order to regain the scholarship. Very similar language, again, just covering all the bases on page 7 and 8. And that's essentially what's happening here. I would just leave it at that and stand for questions.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My question is, how long could a student remain ineligible and then be reinstated? In other words, is that going to be an accrued liability that builds up? And how do we know when that student's finally exhausted the opportunity to reinstate?
Representative Wallace. Chairman McComey.
Thank you. I believe that there's a two-year window that you can apply for the Hathaway. If you drop out, what this is allowing you is to, I believe, to use that two-year window. I think the good gentleman from Casper, who was the expert on this, maybe has an answer to that, too. But that's what this is, and you only have 6 years to use up your Hathaway. You can't go in and out and in and out. It's got to be used within 6 years.
Representative Harshman.
Actually, thank you for that promotion. I've never been an expert in anything, I think, but just ask my wife. Just ask the fans, parents. Okay, in all seriously.
On point, Chair, Mr.
Actually, there is a question coming, and that is my question. It's the 8 semesters in 6 years, and that's, I guess I was, my question was, and I read the bill, and I'm trying to read it in the statute. If you lose your one semester when you're doing your makeup, you've lost your eligibility, does that take away one of your 8 semesters? That's my question. Or is it you still have 8 and 6 years to get, or do you now only have 7 semesters? That's my question, and I'm trying to find it in the bill. But thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My understanding, and I think the rest of my colleagues would agree, that you do lose it. So it's 4 within the 6, and that part still stays in place. That's my understanding.
Is there any further discussion? Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 21 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 21 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Teeters.
May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Madam Chairman and members of the body, it is my pleasure today to introduce the newest addition to the Teeters family and her beautiful mother. This is Addison.
Representative Teeters, it's about time Addison got to the House. Thank you.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Hales.
May I have the privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
In the south balcony are the executive director of the Wyoming Real Estate Association, the Casper Association director, and visiting realtors. Tonight is the realtor reception at 6 o'clock. So if you would welcome them, please.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 39, introduced by Representative Senator Hastert, an act relating to the State Miners Hospital Board. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Escobel K., Hales, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Lubnow, Millen, Stewart, Eichel, excused. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 39 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. And I turn the microphone over to the good representative from the town where water springs from rocks.
Representative Kraft.
And it really does, too. I bring you Senate File 39. A little bit of background on this is the initial authority for the Miners Hospital, which is what this bill addresses, was actually included in the Wyoming Constitution. Then legislation that was passed in 2001 created the Miners Hospital Board, which is what we're dealing with today. Now, Rock Springs, where water springs from rocks, was clear back in 1892 declared to be the place for the State Miners Hospital. So because of that, the legislation from 2001 allowed for 4 members from the Sweetwater County Memorial Hospital Board and 2 Sweetwater County members on this hospital board. Campbell County, which of course is the other county in the state with significant mining impact, was given places on the board to include 2 miners and 1 hospital board member. Now, all Senate File 39 is seeking to do is just one thing, and that's redefining the board's membership structure. And this bill comes as the result of a unanimous request that was made to us by the current Miners Hospital Board. Since its inception, the Miners Hospital Board has instituted several free programs to address the really significantly higher incidence of health problems among miners and those that have participated in the mining industry. And on your desk, you should have a handout that talks a little bit about some of these programs, gives you a little history of the hospital board, and talks about the free programs, which include wellness screening vans traveling throughout the state, assistance with hearing aid purchase, assistance with medical bills or prescription drugs. There are approximately 4,500 miners each year that access these services. So the main goal of the board's activities is the health of miners throughout the state, not just in Sweetwater County and Campbell County. And they have but one constituency, which is the miners of Wyoming. So what the board wants to do is they want to reconfigure its board membership away from hospital representation and towards a representation that more accurately reflects its current mission, which is increased representation and voice from its clientele, which is the miners of Wyoming. Therefore, Senate File 39 was born, which has the one purpose, to amend the board membership to now include only one member from the Sweetwater County Memorial Hospital Board and seven at-large members to represent minors throughout the state. Now, at least one of those members needs to be a resident of Sweetwater County, and at least one additional member needs to be from Campbell County. Now, there's already in statute a member from the Campbell County Memorial Hospital Board, and that will remain. So it's a reconfiguration. It reflects the wishes of the current board. It reflects their wishes to be more representative of their statewide clientele. I would urge your adoption of Senate File 39. Thank you.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think that it's a rational change to this Senate or to the Miners Hospital Board. But I have a question that is not clear to me, and I guess I would like to know the answer. And it says it on page 2, line 16 through 19, as of the effective date of this act, the governor shall appoint three new members representing minors of the and the terms of those members shall begin at that time. Many of the governor appointments in the state of Wyoming are ratified by the Senate, and I just don't remember whether that's been the practice with the Miners Hospital Board, and if that's the case, when does that step go into this proposed change?
Representative Kraft.
It has not. They have been gubernatorial appointments, and the idea for Section 2 of the bill, which I believe you're addressing, Chairman Lockhart, is just to have this begin as of the effective date.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 39 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 39 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Oh. Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, privilege of the floor.
You may.
Well, folks, it isn't very often that we get folks coming in all the way from the big city of Cody, Buffalo Bill country. Thanks to him, a lot of research on that. But we have also joining this little realtor bunch here, we have Mike and Nancy Thompson in the North Gallery. If we could get them to stand up, get the house to greet them. Welcome.
Representative Slater.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's my pleasure to meet three of, to introduce you to three of Laramie's top realtors that are in our galleys today. If they'd please stand, Sandra Ikey, Ann Vicky, and Karen Pond.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 43, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to contagious and infectious diseases among livestock. This bill was referred to Committee No. 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which respectfully recommends that it be approved. Ayes, Blake, Rechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Samuelson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass, and I will explain the Senate file. Madam Chairman, this was a bill that corrects an oversight that we left out of the statutes last year when we were looking over the state or the state veterinarian's responsibilities. What It has to do with diseases and reportable diseases. Some of the contagious diseases that could be out there would be possibly brucellosis, foot and mouth, you just name it. It could be any of these serious diseases we're interested in. We have a lot of confidentiality within our state, but we're required to notify the state veterinarian, but however, the state veterinarian is not even allowed to tell his veterinarians within his staff, let alone a community veterinarian. So what this does, Madam Chairman, is just allow the state veterinarian to not only notify owners of the contact animals that might be diseased, the adjacent landowners, but also the local area practicing veterinarians. If there's no questions, I'd call for the question, Madam Chairman.
Oh, Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have one question here. If you're in a large city, are you required to contact all the veterinarians in that area or just any one particular one?
Chairman Salmuson.
Madam Chairman, I would expect that it would be all the areas within an infected area. Say if there was something in the Cheyenne, Laramie County area, obviously we'd want all of the large animal veterinarians, but the small animal veterinarians, there wouldn't be any need for them. It'd be only ones working with the contagious disease.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Samuelson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 57, introduced by Representative Anderson, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system regarding hospitals' participation.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass. No standing committee amendment. And there is no standing committee amendment. I'll turn the management of the bill over to the good representative from our southwest corner of the state.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senate File 57 allows employees of county memorial hospitals and special hospital districts to participate in the Wyoming retirement system. The reasons for this is that some small hospitals have difficulty recruiting physicians and other hospital personnel, and some of the hospitals do not have a retirement system. What this bill does is it prohibits the participation of these employees from being in any other retirement system. I gave you a handout from the director of the Wyoming retirement system that answers some questions that came up when this bill was heard in committee. This will not affect our Wyoming retirement system. The actual aerial integrity of the system will remain intact. In fact, it is the belief of our director that actually adding some new employees to the system could strengthen the plan. One of the things, too, is that it will take considerable time for the employees to have vested interest in the plan, and so therefore it would not affect the plan at all. Another question that came up were on COLAs and whether or not the state would be responsible for the COLA payments and an increase in COLA payments. And according to the director, this is already covered within the investments of the retirement fund itself, and that is how the COLAs are presently paid for, and it would not require legislative action. Another thing that came up is that these are county memorial hospitals. We know that some hospitals in the state are called county memorial hospitals, but the employees are not public employees. Some of these hospitals are managed by private companies. The Attorney General will be in charge of looking at the hospitals in question or all the hospitals to determine whether or not these employees are in fact public employees. This bill would help these small community hospitals. It will not affect our Wyoming retirement system. It could be a benefit. And I stand for any further questions you may have on this bill. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
Question being called. All those in favor? Oh, excuse me, Chairman Philp.
I just wondered, when you discussed this bill, did you discuss the possibility of other special districts that might want to do this if we do this for hospitals?
Madam Chairman, in the bill it does say that county memorial hospitals and special district hospitals as well could apply for it. One of the things I wanted you to know, too, is that all of the employees of the hospital must opt into the plan. It will not be individual members who will come into the plan. The whole hospital and all the employees have to agree to be in the plan.
Madam Chairman.
Chairman Philp.
What I'm thinking about is, like, say, weed and pest districts or fire districts, or, you know, we have a lot of different special districts out there besides hospital districts. And I just wonder if that opens the door for them, and I have no idea whether it would hurt or harm the state retirement plan.
Representative Meyer.
Madam Chairman, that did not come up in our discussion, and in this bill it would only cover the hospitals.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is along the same lines. If we open it up to county memorial hospitals and special hospital districts, then there will be, I'm sure, a request to open it up to other special districts. And I wonder how many are out there. What are we looking at here? This is almost like retirement for other, where we've allowed people to opt into the retirement system, and then we leave someone out, and then we have to review them, and then the next year it's some other group. And where does this lead us?
Representative Meyer.
Madam Chairman, I can't answer that question because the only thing that we are faced with right now are the hospitals and their requests. This would be something that this body would have to address, I would say, if this came up in another session of the legislature.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In our discussions of this issue, the bringer of the proposal and who has worked with people extensively across the state, this is a recruitment tool. Many of these small community hospitals are having difficulty retaining people, and it's just another means for them to say, work for us, stay with us, for the staffs that they have. And that is why you see the proposal before you that you have today that's limited to this particular segment of our state.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 57 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration.
Madam Chairman.
Chairman Anderson.
Could I have privilege of the floor?
You may, sir.
I would like to introduce to you the latest member of the Anderson family and her mother, Mandy Teeters.
Yay!
Thank you, Grandpa. Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 11. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 11, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to subdivisions, large acre parcels. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass amended. Ayes, Brown, Illaway, Martin, Meyer, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan. No, Miller, Korberg. Excused, Gilmore. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 11, Subdivisions, Large Acreage Parcels, do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And before we get to the Standing Committee amendments, we'll try to walk through the bill a little bit, try to explain where the Standing Committee amendments do fit. But before we get to the whole thing, this particular file, and we've worked on it in the interim for some time, is not something to tell large ranchers or whatever what they can and cannot do with their land. It is the result of some of the abuses which have occurred in the last few years in the state relative to the subdivisions of large ranches into 35-plus acre ranchettes. And as my good friend from the western part of the state has called them, weedettes. We have seen abuses in not only Natrona, but in Laramie, Goshen, Albany, and Carbon counties, and we have certainly heard about them. One of the real reasons we have felt the necessity of creating a statute on the regulation of large acreage parcels has been because of the abuses, which will eventually cost the counties a lot of money and will cost the state, because when these folks that have purchased these 35-acre or larger subdivisions, they'll want water, they want roads, there's a lack of utilities, there's a lack of everything. As I say, we've worked on this file during the interim. The Senate has held several days of hearings, as well as in the House. This may not be a perfect piece of legislation, but it is a tool that the county commissioners can use to have the public who buy these ranchettes know what they're buying or what they should expect that they're buying. I've had emails, pictures from people who have bought in these areas. Maybe you have too. What they thought they were getting, they did not get. There are some areas in northern Albany County where it's a subdivision across a large ranch. These people may not get out till spring. The snow is so deep, they thought they were buying into a subdivision and the county was going to maintain the roads. Far from it. The lady did get to the mailbox, but it was a 7-mile round trip by walking through snowdrifts, and it will probably get worse. This bill has been discussed by the Large Livestock Association, the association of folks that are in the gallery, and many others. We've had many discussions, and as I stated, there is a Standing Committee amendment which we will walk through as we go through the bill. And I'm going to kind of ask my learned counsel from across the summit to kind of stand up there and help if we need some help and as we walk through the bill. So, learned counsel, if you would like to stand up there while we can walk through this bill. And he's highly paid. This is an act relating to subdivisions, providing for regulation by counties of subdivisions of 35 to 140-acre parcels. I can't use a prop because we played that game a year or so ago. But I can tell you that south of Cheyenne, there is a subdivision of 960 acres where the gentleman was told that by the county commissioners that he could not have a specific subdivision, that there probably was not enough water, it was too dense, and so forth, that he ought to go for 35 acres. That's what he's doing. It's 35 acres, which is composed of about 250 feet wide by a mile long. And it was in the newspapers the other day, and he has put trailer houses out there. So that is some of the abuses that we continue to see. One of the real problems is counties, although they may have some capability to stop it, the only real stopping is by zoning. Zoning is probably one of the nastiest words in the state of Wyoming. Some counties have done it, some have not. But let's walk through the bill and talk about page one, requirements for large acreage subdivision permits. There's some new language. Except as otherwise provided, a county by resolution elect to apply the provisions of this article on a uniform basis to the sale or disposition of individual pieces of land. One of the pieces that has been carefully crafted with the large livestock association is found on page two. It's one of the pieces that the Senate went ahead and amended in, and that says every landowner shall have the right in every county to sell or transfer in every five-year period up to 10 units of land exempt from the provisions of this section, provided that the units of land so sold or transferred shall not be further divided within 5 years under this exemption, and provided that any entities sharing 80% or more common ownership shall be treated as one entity for the purpose of this exemption. The 10 splits has been very, very important to ranchers. One of the reasons is that if you have a large ranch, but you're going to take a look at some inheritance taxes or some inheritance problems, you're probably going to need to split off some land from that ranch to be able to sell so that you can pay the inheritance tax. And that's why the 10 splits is in this particular piece of legislation. Then we get down to on page two, at the bottom, there are two amendments that are in the standing committee amendment that talks about the board and submission of the plat. And we can talk about that if necessary, but that's where the two amendments there. We've gone through, we have removed lines 21, 22, 23, and 1 and 2 on page 3 because that was a mistake left over from our friends to the west of here. Some of the additional amendments are on page 3 where we've taken out satisfactory to the board. That was not necessary. But what we say on page 2, and we work over to page 3, the board may require the following information to be submitted with each application for a subdivision permit pursuant to this section. And you'll see that on page 3 we talk about evidence that the proposed subdivision complies with any applicable zoning, survey plat, date of preparation, and so forth. Page 4, the subdivider, and one of the amendments is duly authorized, the subdivider or his duly authorized agent. It was noted that agents cannot sell or offer. It should be a duly authorized agent. And we've done that again on binding arrangements have been made by the person or his duly authorized agent. We go through on page 4, a study evaluating the sewage systems. One of the problems with these large acreage subdivisions is people think that there's sewage systems, septic tanks, water. And one of the problems that we have found is that, quite frankly, nobody has told them different. So on the plat, it says no proposed centralized sewage system in large capital letters. Two of the Some of the amendments on page 5, we've taken out the word solicitations and advertisements because that just doesn't fit. But we've tried to say that there are no proposed utility connections or limited utility connections as appropriate. There are people that haven't got a clue what it's going to cost to provide utilities out there in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Then we go on the bottom of page 5, and I hope my learned counsel will say something if he feels necessary. On bottom of page 5, a study evaluating the water supply system. Water has been discussed, and it's probably one of the more crucial things that needs to be shown on the plat. No proposed central water supply system. The one particular large acreage subdivision in the central part of the state of 60,000 acres. Yes, they have water, and it's down 500 feet, but no, you don't want to drink it. So, yes, they have water, but people need to know what they're buying. We go on page 6. We talk about documentation that adequate access has been provided and that all proposed streets, alleys, and roadways within the subdivision conform to the minimum standards adopted by the board, so forth. The particular one large subdivision that I am particularly cognizant of and have been on is again in central Wyoming. You cannot get a 6x6 fire truck down that road. There are other areas, and as I indicated, in North Albany County, the people that bought the subdivision thought they were buying roads that were going to be maintained by the county. There's additional language on for the Standing Committee amendment. We've taken out satisfactory to the board. We've talked about removing the language advertisements and solicitations. We on page 7, line 10, documentation that the subdivider has adequate financial resources to develop and complete any facility proposed or represented to be the responsibility of the subdivider. In the years that I have been down here and have served on the Minerals Committee, I remember folks coming to the Minerals Committee and pleading that we had to help with water supply in the northern counties. My learned friend from House District 10 in eastern Laramie County will tell you about the problems that they have had with the Select Water Committee, with folks coming in and asking for help for adequate water. Again, that's why we say the subdivider has to have adequate finances. And then we talk about on page 9 or page 8, with respect to any water rights, appurtenant to land to be subdivided in accordance with this section. You've got to have some documentation. We talk about the state engineer, a plan, a copy of which was submitted and approved by the state engineer prior to the final approval of the subdivision application. If the subdivision is located on page 9, if the subdivision is located within an irrigation district, we've tried to cover that, because that can really create problems with a particular subdivision in an irrigation district where folks really have no clue as to how that irrigation district operates, what the ditch means, how they could get water, maybe they can't get water, did they buy it, and so forth. On the bottom of page 9, we talk about evidence that the subdivider will specifically state on all his offers relative to the subdivision his intent to comply with the paragraphs that the seller does not warrant to a purchaser that he shall have any rights to the natural flow of any stream within or adjacent to proposed subdivision. On page 10, the board shall require the applicant to obtain review and recommendations from the local conservation district. Folks think that they can have 40 acres, a piece of the rock, and they can put a whole bunch of cows and horses out there for 4-H, and they just flat out don't know that in some of these areas it might take 60 acres for one cow. So that's one of the things that we wanted to put in. The other item is on page 10. The board should require the applicant to obtain review and recommendations from a fire protection district. There are some areas of this state that do not have fire protection districts. Other areas of the state do, but if you can't get your fire truck down the road, it's probably not going to help anybody. Many of you have driven six bys, which state forestry has made available to fire protection districts, and they are like herding cattle. So it's necessary that people know that the lots probably are not a part of a fire protection district unless otherwise provided. On page 11, we talk about if the permit is approved, the board should require the applicant to give notice on the plat that the surface estate of the land to be subdivided is subject to full and effective development of the mineral estate. One of the ranches that's been subdivided has been, there are minerals underneath it. It's been drilled for oil. It's been drilled for gas. I can't imagine one of these people coming out on a 40-acre subdivision. They bought it. They fenced it. They've messed up with the wildlife coming through. And now somebody comes out there with an oil rig and says, oh, by the way, I have a permit to drill out here. And they just move on to that piece of property. Folks do not understand the mineral estate, and they need to, and that's why this paragraph is in there. Page 11 in the middle is where a portion of the Standing Committee amendment is. If the lots created pursuant to a permit issued under this section are used for agricultural purposes and otherwise qualify as agricultural land, then they would still get the agricultural exemption. Down at the bottom of page 11, we talk about subsequent sale of subdivided lots. We've changed the word contract for purchase to contract for deed. On page 12, you'll notice there's a definitions. What we're talking about, the Wyoming Statutes 18.5301 through 317, talk about exemptions from provisions. This article shall not apply to the sale or other, except as provided in Wyoming Statutes 18.5316, this article shall not apply to the sale or other disposition of land where the parcels involved are 35 acres or larger, subject to the requirement that ingress and egress and utility easements shall be provided to each parcel by binding and recordable easements. Over on page 13, we talk about subdivision permit required. Page 13 in the middle, Planning Commission may receive applications and make recommendations. Again, down in the middle or on line 21, we talk about fire protection districts. And we get to the end, and it's effective July 1, 2008. And somewhere in this piece, we also tell that we want to, and I glossed over it, and it was an important piece for me, that these contracts, and it's on the bottom of page 11, if any lot is created pursuant to subdivision and the lot is sold pursuant to a contract for deed, notice of the contract for deed shall be recorded with the county clerk within 10 days after the contract was executed. This is one of the problems. These outfits are out there. They are still claiming the agricultural exemption. And we think that those contracts need to be filed with the county clerk. And what you hear from the large acreage subdividers is, well, the county's going to get all this land or all these taxes because these folks are out there buying the 35 and 40 acres. Nobody knows they're buying 35 and 40 acres until that contract is filed. So that is a run-through. Learned counsel. I will then call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to move it?
I did, but I will do it again. And I move, do pass, I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brown?
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I have a question on the Standing Committee Amendment, page 2, or page 1. It's the amendment to page 2, line 17, and it's lines 17 through 35 on the amendment. And it refers on line 19 to the exemption provided. And I'm not sure what that refers to. Is that the 10-unit exemption? And why does it only apply to the... Okay, well, if that's the 10-unit exemption, then it, just a little more explanation as to why that's there.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It does apply to the 10-acre exemption, and the word exempt appears in line 4 of page 2. It says that, and we've been calling them splits just for some terminology, and as the bill was originally written, it said every landowner got 10 splits every 5 years that were exempt from the provisions of this, and then with the Standing Committee amendment, we inserted on line 2 before every, we inserted except as provided in this subsection. It would then read every landowner has 10 splits every 5 years, exempt from the provisions of this section. And then the part that we added in the Standing Committee amendment beginning at line 17 said the exemption provided by this subsection shall be granted by the board upon submission of, and then it lays out the matters that have to be submitted with the splits, with the landowner splits.
Madam Chairman, if I might follow up.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
So as I read the bill with the Standing Committee amendment, if I wanted to subdivide 1,400 acres into 10 lots, I would do that, and I would have to follow the, if my county opted into this, I'd have to follow the requirements of the bill. If I then exercised the 10-unit exemption, it says that the units of land so sold, this is page 2, line 6, that the units of land so sold or transferred shall not be further divided. So if I then wanted to further divide into 20 lots, cutting each one of them in half, I would only have to provide those things that are identified in the Standing Committee Amendment, page 2, line 17, that does not include, all it really says is the location of the subdivision units, and units, you know, that's usually lots, tracts, parcels, and units, but then I don't even have to show roads, utilities, because it's exempt. Is that how it reads? And why is that? If it is exempt, then do I have to go through the rest of the requirements in the bill, or I just provide what's there in the Standing Committee amendment?
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, as the bill was originally written, it said every landowner got 10 splits every 5 years. We then modified that to say, let me go back. It said he gets 10 splits every 5 years exempt from any subdivision regulations. We went into this with the Standing Committee amendment and said he can have the 10 splits every 5 years exempt from the subdivision regulations except nobody's exempt, in other words, from those requirements that begin on line 19 of the Standing Committee amendment and run through line 34. That's on page 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment. So every landowner can have his, as this is written, there's another amendment coming that's going to address that. But as it would stand with the Standing Committee Amendment, our intent, and I hope that's what we said, was every landowner gets 10 splits every 5 years, exempt from the subdivision regulations imposed by the statute, except he still has to do these things that are listed on lines 19 through 34 of the standing of page 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment. So he doesn't get 10 splits every 5 years totally exempt. He gets 10 splits every 5 years, but even on those 10 splits, he has to submit a survey plat, and he has to show evidence of compliance with paragraphs B6 and B9 of the section. And B6 is the disclosure on the water system, and B9 is getting, if it's on irrigated ground, getting the water rights squared away with the state engineer.
Chairman Childers? No? Okay. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would like to divide the Standing Committee Amendment on page 2. The first division would be lines 31 to 41. And what this part does is gives the ag exemption back to these subdivided parcels. And I'm only taking this to where we can vote on this separate, so the body knows what we're doing here. I'm really not going to speak. I'm going to vote against allowing this in it, but I want the body to be able to vote it up or down to include it in this particular bill.
The division, per the chair, is divisible, so we are speaking about Division 1, lines 31 through 41 on page 2.
Madam Chairman, may I ask another question on the Standing Committee Amendment, which relates to this division?
Majority Floor Leader.
Does the exemption language on page 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment have anything to do with a 35-acre minimum or a 140-acre maximum? Because when I look at page 2, line 2, it simply says every landowner shall have the right in every county to sell or transfer in every five-year period up to 10 units of land exempt from the provisions of this section in 18.5.317. But it's not qualified to fit within the bill, which is the 35-acre minimum and the 140-acre maximum. Or is it? Am I mistaken?
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairwoman, I think the answer to that is that this is, I've had a little trouble with that myself. This is in addition to wrong book, just a minute. This is in addition to Article 3 of Chapter 5 of the statutes, which starts out with 18.5.301. And runs clear through 18.5.315. Then this tacks on 18.5.316. The significance of that is, for instance, the definitions in 18.5.302 that apply to small, what I'll call small lot subdivisions, also applied to the large lot subdivisions that are going to be regulated by this. And so I think the answer to that question is that this is within 18.5.316, and so I don't think that the 10 splits would apply to any other of the statutes in Article 3 of Chapter 5.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I speak, just to clarify, are we on Division 1, which is lines 31 through 41?
Representative Gingrey, yes, on page 2, lines 31 through 41.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. In regard to Division 1, then, what my concern there is that we're creating a two-tier system, in particularly that I believe, and I might have my dates wrong, but it seems like it was around the year 2000 where we changed our taxation policy to say that if you are in a platted subdivision, you do not get the ag exemption. And what was happening was people had a residential home, they would cut some hay around their house and then claim ag exemption. And we made a policy decision to not allow that anymore, that if you were in a platted subdivision, you were not eligible. What this is going to allow by putting this amendment in, these folks will get the ag exemption. So you're going to have a two-tiered system. Some people that are in a platted subdivision will get the ag exemption, and some people that are in a platted subdivision will not. And I'm just concerned that we're creating a two-tiered system. And I'm also a little concerned, and I'm not sure if I'll raise it, but it doesn't seem real germane to the bill to be putting a taxation issue in regards to property tax in this bill. But that's for someone else to raise, I guess.
Chairman Illaway.
Where we are is, if you'll notice on page 11, E, if the permit is approved, let's see, that the estate of the land is to be subdivided, and then we've put in F, which says, if the lots created pursuant to a permit issued under this section are used for agricultural purposes and otherwise qualifies agricultural land for purposes of Statutes 39-13-103, the lot or parcel shall be deemed not to be part of a platted subdivision for those purposes. And then we've gone ahead and moved stuff down. I think really where we are, there are some areas of ranches that have a platted subdivision, but on the other hand, not all those lots have been sold. So this does allow, if I'm correct, this does allow that portion to be used for agriculture and qualify as agricultural land. Now, I'm not exactly sure what representative from the middle part of the state is trying to do. But I assume you're going to talk about it.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I do think that that a policy issue has been raised. And I do think that that we were, as far as I know, the information we were provided is accurate, that there was a policy decision made that if land is platted, then it's not going to be taxed as ag land anymore, and this would run contrary to that policy. And so if the body wants to be consistent with that policy decision, I think you would vote no on Division 1 to the Standing Committee Amendment. I think that would be the effect.
Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I'd urge you to vote no on Division 1 to have that removed from the Standing Committee Amendment, because I think it takes us backwards. And I think it's a good discussion to have to go backwards on that one, because we've had that now, I think, since maybe 2001. But simply, if it's part of a platted subdivision, it's not agricultural. And we're going back to the old policy in this Standing Committee Amendment, but I don't think we should do it in this bill. We need to review that entire policy, I think, in some respects, because certainly there are, if it's a 200-acre subdivision lot and it's part of a farm, it's agricultural. But it can't receive the agricultural exemption because if it's part of a subdivision. I think that this is a dangerous step in this bill.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, arising in favor of Division 1, I don't think this is a step backwards. What it is a recognition of a fundamentally different kind of division of land. When this body made the decision that those pieces of land that were involved in subdivisions would not be taxed as agricultural, you were looking strictly at parcels of land that were under 35 acres. And so a decision makes sense in that context to say, you know, that's really not an agricultural type property, that it deserves the exemption. What this gives recognizes is that you can have tracts of land in a subdivision up to 140 acres that retain that agricultural nature. And so there are the other tests. I mean, as you go through an assessment, you have to meet those tests of the income produced off the land and those sorts of things to qualify for the ag exemption. But what this recognizes is as you're dealing with much larger tracts of land, they are much more susceptible to characterization as being agricultural. So I think this isn't a step backwards. It's a common sense recognition of a different kind of subdivision, and I would encourage you to support Division 1.
Majority floor leader.
Well, Madam Chairman, maybe he's correct, and we should consider that. But I do agree that it did apply to everything under 35 acres because everything over that was exempt. And so maybe we still do have the question of whether or not it meets agricultural land. And I'm wondering, is that the definition or the qualification in 3913? 103 B, Roman numeral X, capital A, and B, which says in B, 3, if the land is not leased, the owner of the land has derived annual gross revenues of not less than $500 from the marketing of agricultural products. Or if the land is leased, then the lessee has derived annual gross revenues of not less than $1,000 from the marketing of agricultural products. So I guess it would have to meet that test. And that's specifically referred to as 3913-103-BXB2. Well, maybe it could be clearer in that it could cite the actual requirements to obtain the agricultural exemption outside of a subdivision lot in B3, but it doesn't quite get there. So I guess my objection isn't quite as strenuous as it was because... Because there is a test and that test has its own issues with it, but thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is deja vu all over again. That was a question as when that was first decided on whether subdivisions should be taxed as ag or not. And a whole huge issue came with what if you were a small orchard or a market garden? Well, tough luck. If you were in a subdivision, that was voted as being taxed as subdivision land and not agriculture. And that question really needs to go back and be examined and defined as agriculture, and so it wasn't defined as a size of an acreage, but it was defined as income made from that acreage as to whether or not it would be agriculture or not. And so I think that this is a step backwards if we leave this in, so I would urge the body to vote against it and consider the question of what is ag, and the way we've advocated for it now is it's in Wyoming, it's large farms and ranches.
Representative Miller.
Thank you for that discussion, Madam Chair. It's pretty clear if you vote for this division, you're voting to give the ag exemption to these new subdivided lots in this range. If you vote against, you know, if you vote for it, you're giving it the ag exemption. You vote against it, you're not giving it the ag exemption. So you voted the way you feel. If you think the arguments that you heard needs the ag exemption, vote for it. If not, vote against it.
Question being called on Division 1. Excuse me, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would think that I could buy a quarter section of ground that was farm ground, and it wouldn't be a subdivision. If it's a subdivision and we're still going to give ag exemption, then it has a sign up on it or on the proposal, no proposed utility connections, no proposed centralized sewage system. It seems to me that that if you wanted agriculture land, don't subdivide it. Just buy the quarter section. That's the way I see it. So I would recommend that you vote no on this portion.
Question being called on Division 1 of Standing Committee Amendment 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Division 1 of Amendment 1 has, Standing Committee 1 has failed. We're on to Division 2. Oh, division being called. All those in favor of Division 1, please stand. Just say division is failed. Okay. And all those opposed, please stand. So it's failed.
35.
Division 1 of the amendment has failed. We are now on Division 2, which is page 1, lines 1 through 22, page 2, lines 2 through 30, and then 43 through 47, and page 3, lines 2 through 15. All those in favor? Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. We're on Division 2 of the amendment.
All right. Let's make sure. I thought it was all of page 1, a portion of page 2, and all of page 3.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's what I said.
Okay. I don't hear it all back here sometimes, so that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I need to stand up. All right. Is everybody on the same page? Question being called. All those in favor of Division 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Division 2 to the Standing Committee 1 has passed. Now,
hey, Madam Chairman, thanks for the support on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. There is a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and that's my other learned counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that Chairman Childers was in the back corner, and because it's camel color today, I'm not quite catching all of you, so I apologize for that, Chairman Childers.
Madam Chairman, back on the bill, before we get into the rest of the amendments, while I appreciate in several sections of the bill, you clearly, or make it quite clear, no proposed utilities, no proposed centralized sewer system and so forth, and very clearly in the advertisement, I guess I'm curious on page 11, section E, why, for the severed mineral estate, why it isn't made quite clear in there. Quite frankly, a lot of the discussions, or maybe I shouldn't say discussion, heated arguments that we have concerning some of the subdivisions concern exactly that. So why don't we make it quite clear in the contracts and advertisements that it's severed? And then I have one other question.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This was a paragraph that was put in by that association that's in the center part of the state. Probably almost their exact wording on the mineral estate. So we did not change it. We felt the wording, if the permit is approved, the board should require the applicant to give notice on the plat, to give notice on the plat that the surface estate of the land to be subdivided is subject to full and effective development of the mineral estate unless the entire mineral estate is conveyed with the surface estate. We felt that that was adequate since he is giving notice on the plat.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chairman, second question. This whole bill is providing for regulation by the counties of subdivisions. And another problem in the subdivisions is the whole issue with whether you want to call it covenancies or not. And by no means am I proposing any strict regulation. A little clearer notice in the contracts that if you don't follow the regulations that you put in place, especially if they're in writing, they aren't worth the paper they're written on if you let people violate those regulations. And why wasn't that put in there?
Madam Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
On that issue of page 11, subparagraph E at the top on the notice on the plat, I find it really odd that you wouldn't have notice on the plat if the entire mineral estate is conveyed with the surface estate, because there's so many subsequent purchasers down the road who might look at the plat and never see that. So I can't understand why you would exempt that out. I would think that, you know, in most things you see, regulations or zoning, it all says, or at least in Park County it does, this is all subject to the development rights of the mineral estate, regardless of ownership of the mineral estate. And I would think that that qualifier just doesn't make sense in there.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you, I think it's an important piece because of where these developments are occurring. We would certainly welcome an amendment if you would like to craft one.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, the second question that I asked concerning, how to make it quite clear to the people that buy the properties that if they don't adhere to the regulations that they're buying them under, they aren't going to be worth the paper they're written on.
Chairman Illaway. Okay. Is there any further discussion on this committee of the whole amendment? I gather so. Representative Stipson.
Madam Chairwoman, and I will actually start discussion of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I'd move for its adoption. And what this amendment does is it amends the portion of the bill found on page 2 that talks about the 10-acre splits or the 10-acre exemptions. And as my colleague from Laramie County mentioned to you, one of the most significant developments to this bill after the beginning of the session was when our friends down the hall added on an exemption that allowed for there to be split off 10 units of land and sold exempt from the requirements of the statute. There are, however, a number of problems with that exemption as drafted, and we have worked with those folks that represent ranchers in the state to craft a replacement that I think more closely follows the intent of the exemption and closes some of the loopholes that could basically swallow the law. One of the problems was the one that was alluded to by the representative from Park County, and that's there's a confusion, or could be some confusion with regard to those 10 units, because it does not specifically or clearly say that those 10 units are of 140 acres or less. And so there is the potential to regulate what we never intended to regulate and say you're entitled to 10 splits, period. And that's certainly not what we meant. If you're splitting parcels up that are larger than 140, that's not what this law is aimed at regulating, and there was no intent to regulate that. So that's one problem with the bill as it currently stands. The other problem is that it is focused on the landowner, irrespective of how many tracts of property that landowner may have. You may have a landowner with several large holdings, and yet they are limited to 10 splits, just like the owner of one large holding. And that becomes problematic. But perhaps the biggest problem is that you could, in transferring the property from landowner to landowner, succeed in totally subdividing a large tract of property without ever having to qualify for any of the requirements of this bill. And that would work in this way. If I owned a tract of property, 2,000 acres, and I split off my 10 tracts of land that were less than 140 acres, and then I transferred that to my cousin Chuck. Well, he's now a new landowner, and he now qualifies for that same exemption. He splits off his 10 acres and transfers it, and so on and so forth. And so the five-year limitation that's found in the exemption as written really becomes meaningless. And, in fact, the bill, in large part, becomes meaningless. So what the amendment seeks to do is, instead of focusing on the landowners and instead of affording the exemption to landowners, you're looking at the tract of property. And so each tract of property, as it is recorded on July 1st, 2008, is entitled to those 10 split-offs of 140 acres or less, 140 acres to 35 acres. And that closes that loophole, and it makes clear that if I own 10 large tracts of property, I'm entitled to split off those splits off each of those tracts. And it more closely ties into the purpose of this, which is to deal with estate planning issues, to deal with, you know, family conflict issues, wildlife corridor issues, all those things that you've seen that were the basis for adopting the exemption in the first place. So I think it hits closer to the mark of what we're trying to do, and I would just urge your support of Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 and would stand for questions on it.
Representative Esquibel.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if what's being recommended over here, if it would address that situation which a good friend from Casper mentioned in terms of landowner A selling to landowner B and landowner B selling back to landowner A, if it would address that situation.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairwoman, really the transfers now become inconsequential because you're looking at the tract of property. So you can transfer it 1,000 times, and you're still looking at the splits of 10 off of it. And so it really, I think, simplifies the administration of the exemption and gets around the sort of gamesmanship that the current exemption invites.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Just a question that just popped into my mind that I should have discussed with my desk mate earlier. But in the bill, if a county chooses not to go up to the 140-acre maximum, let's say they set their county limit at 70 or 80, are we still limiting those counties from selling off parcel land under 140 acres just because the county standards at 70 or 80? We're still putting an added burden or requirement on them that they can't do this, even if the county commissioners rule it at a certain level?
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairwoman, as written, yes. The you're looking at the 100, irrespective of what top limit the county designates, the exemption would be applicable to those of 140 acres to 35 acres.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to make sure that I understand the effect of this amendment. This amendment is basically allowing a one-time exemption between now and July 1st of 2008, and then after that, it goes away.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, the not exactly, but close. The it does limit it to a one-time 10 split-offs, but you can do that at any time. So I can split off one this year, one in 10 years, one every year for the next 10 years. So the time really has nothing to do with it other than, yes, you get your splits, but you only get to split those 10, a maximum of 10 off over the life, over forever, essentially.
Representative Korberg.
I guess I'm just not following this. If you own property now, and let's say you have it up for sale, and you actually have a closing date, and it changes hands after July 1st of 2008, does this amendment still allow that new owner, if it closes July 2nd, 2008, does that new landowner have the opportunity to do the 10 split?
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, yes, it does. The July 1st, 2008 refers to parcel. And so what you can't do is take your 2,000 acres and then after July 1st, 2008, split it into two 1,000-acre parcels and then get 10 off of each of those. But it doesn't matter who owns it before, who owns it after. What you're looking at is what is the parcel of land involved as of July 1st, 2008.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I believe I understand what you're trying to do with this amendment, and I think it's good. You're trying to prevent there just being a churning of this over and over again. But it may be too restrictive, so I'm going to ask you about that. And that is starting on line 16, where you say, in no case shall this exemption be used to create this size property from each original parcel and each parcel created, and that those shall be subject to this section also. It seems that correct me if I'm incorrect. It seems that the other one had a time limit of after 5 years, then there could be further subdivisions. This one doesn't seem to have that time limit of after 5 years there can be further subdivisions. This seems to freeze it that it can just be subdivided once, and that's it. And I guess I'm concerned about that. I would think that you might want to amend that, because if this were properties close to a town or something, then that town were to grow, then there might be a time when you might want to subdivide those into higher density population type areas, and this would keep you from that. Am I reading that correctly?
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, that's only no, because you could divide to your heart's content as long as you're willing to submit the information that's required under this bill. So you are correct to the extent that you get one shot at dividing off the ten parcels. But if you do desire to create a higher density, if you are closer to a town, you can subdivide innumerable times as long as you comply with the provisions of the statute.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I probably should know the answer to this question, but at the risk of sounding stupid, I'm going to ask it anyway. Say the property I own is 1,600 acres, and I sell it or break it into 10 different sections or segments of 160 acres, and then each one of those could be broken down into 10. So you've got one owner, and he's got 16 different 160 acre sections, he could actually end up with, I guess, about 100 different units. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, I wish I had a prop, because I think that it requires maybe some charts. But essentially, if you have the 1,600 acres, and it is the 1,600 acres on July 1st, 2008, and you choose to divide it into 10 parcels of 160, this is irrelevant because it doesn't, the statute doesn't apply. You're over the 140 acres, and so it doesn't matter. But of those 10 parcels, out of what was that original 1,600 acres, over the lifetime, you can only take 10 parcels of under 140 acres off that 1,600 acres. And, you know, whoever of those subsequent 10 owners wants to do that and comes in first to do that would have the opportunity to do that. But you only, what you're looking at is the parcel as of July 1st, 2008. And it's 10 parcels of 140 acres within that 1,600 acre parcel.
Excuse me one moment. Let's have Representative Brown follow up with Representative Stubson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And please remember, we're talking about exemptions from the subdivision regulation. We're not saying that after July 1, 2008, you can't do subdivisions. We're talking about a subset of subdivisions that are partially exempt from the subdivision regulation. This doesn't regulate whether you can subdivide your property, how often, when, or not. We're only talking about instances in which there's a reduced set of requirements that apply to that particular division of land.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The way I read this, if I were a landowner and I had 1,000 acres, I would divide it into exempt splits now, anything over 35 acres, and record them all in my name. So they were all in my name as of July 1, 2008, so then I'd have a bunch of original parcels that I could split under the exemption. Because it says the owner of each lawfully recorded parcel of land on July 1, 2008, and then in line 19 it refers to the original parcel. I don't know what the original parcel is, but it seems to me it's that parcel that existed on July 1st of 2008. In Park County, we used to have a regulation that allowed a free split without regard to any exemption or size. If on, you know, some date in 1978, that parcel was owned as one parcel, you had a free split. That required then the planning department and the county clerks to go back in and research the title when someone would bring in a deed that would split property. So we would be doing that here. I don't necessarily disagree with the intent of the amendment to attempt to limit the exemption, because I think the exemption just eats up the whole bill practically. And I much prefer counties being proactive and doing land use planning and then going through the zoning process if they have to. It may be a dirty word, but we can speak it in Park County without being afraid. And other counties can. And the reason we did that was because it was obvious what was happening. And so, you know, there's a community effort. You do the land use planning, and from that you talk about zoning and you talk about property rights and takings and what is fair regulation. And certainly this bill, even with the exemptions, and, you know, we're taking away a right to subdivide that exists now. So that's a little off the point of the amendment. But I also had a question about whether 18.5.3.17 should also be referenced, like in line 10 after section, wherever you say section. I just say that because in the bill, when it talks about the exemption, it also cites section 317, and that's the one about the contract for deed, you know, some notice being recorded. It's not that big a deal, but it just seemed to me that would also be cited.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. That was not a Park County rule. That's a state statute that still exists. 34.12.102, every original owner or proprietor of any tract or parcel of land who has heretofore subdivided or shall hereafter subdivide the same into three or more parts for purposes of laying out any town or city or any addition thereto, or suburban lots shall cause a plat to be filed. That, nothing's changed. That exists now, and I recognize the problem that the majority floor leader is talking about, and that's perhaps our one protection that we're going to have during whatever the phase-in period in this thing is, because there is going to be some of the activity that you discussed, but if they divide it into three or more parts, then they have to file a plat. And with that, I'll yield to my tag team partner, Madam Chairwoman.
Madam Chairman, can I follow up on that?
Yes, Mr. comment? Majority Floor Leader.
The exemption in 185303B, which is the 35-acre or larger exemption, which says that, you know, this article, which is the Subdivision Act, does not apply to any sale or other disposition in 35 acres or larger. Does 3412102 apply to those exempt splits?
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairwoman, I think it does. I don't think, Madam Chairwoman, it was not our intention to compromise in any way 3412102. I think that continues to exist. And the reason it would continue to exist is the genesis of this statute's actually existed in some form or another since, according to this, 1887. And I think it's for the convenience, it was always my understanding, it's for the convenience of the assessor that if people start dividing into three or more pieces, they have to file a plat so that the assessor's got some mechanism for keeping track of the property. And it, that statute even goes on and says if the person doesn't do it, the assessor can do it and bill them for it.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I was under the impression that this legislation was there to do some definitions of some boundaries that would allow the county commissioners to operate within these boundaries and develop their own rules and regulations by resolution. And we seem to be getting to where we're going to make those decisions for in our discussion here. And I'm a little concerned. This amendment that we're on seems to be fairly straightforward, and I'd like to see us refocus.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was picturing myself in the mother county sitting over there. I know we haven't heard it referred to in a while, but in the mother county, we have multiple parcels of land owned by one owner. And some of these parcels sprawl across the whole county. I guess my question, would this owner be restricted to this number of 10 splits on one parcel and then would be prohibited from doing 10 splits, for instance, on the other side of the county?
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, that's exactly one of the problems that this amendment is aimed to address. As the bill is right now, that one landowner would get 10 off of however many parcels he would get a total of 10, no matter how many large parcels he owned. With this, with the amendment, he would be allowed the 10 splits on each parcel that he owns. I guess in referring to a couple of the questions from the representative from Park County, the researching the title, the rush to split properties, I don't think have really anything to do with this particular amendment. As the current bill stands, there would have to be some review of the title to determine whether somebody's entitled to an exemption. And certainly, if we kill this bill or if we pass this bill, anybody in the state can run out and divide their property up into 35-acre parcels until the effective date of the bill. So that has no relevance to this discussion, I don't think. What is important is tightening up the exemption so that it acts as it was meant to act to allow those folks with large tracts of property that need to break off some chunks of that property to pay for property tax and do those sorts of things, have the ability to do so without totally obliterating the principles that are embodied in this legislation.
Is there any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File 11? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are now on to Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 11.
Madam Chairman, with your permission, before I move my amendment, I'd like to just, I don't think we've had really enough time to really talk about the bill itself, and some people close to me would disagree with that, I think. But Madam Chairman, could I do that?
Representative Simlick, that'll be fine. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't know that I have any strong feelings one way or another in regard to Senate File 11, although some of my comments might point to some other direction than that. But, you know, all of us have received comments in regard to this proposed file, and we have for a number of months as it went through interim work. And I just have to tell you that people back home are really somewhat conflicted. I get opinions on both sides, and I've talked to many of you here that feel the same way. And when the good chairman of corporations talked about trying to eliminate some of the abuses, I think if, in fact, this will be the vehicle to do that, well, then, that would probably be fine. But I just want to go through some things here that I think could be of some concern to us in that regard. On the sewer and water, I mean, that seems to be the thing that comes up the most, that these developments out there are creating problems with their water. And there's contemplation in this bill on the study on the water, for example. Just mentions the study. And I think if you look into that a little bit further, you'll find that no report is required for on-lot water developments or on-lot water wells. If you have a centralized water system, then you have to meet DEQ standards, and the problems that the good chairman talked about would be addressed. But if you have water wells, individual water wells on lots, the study will come out. It'll report, what the availability of water might or might not be in the area. But that in itself is not reason enough for the county commissioners, unless they want to be the gatekeepers, to say that the permit can be denied on that basis. That's rather subjective on their part to do that. Same way with the sewer. If you have a centralized sewer system, then it's regulated by the DEQ, and it will be done according to plans and specifications as outlined in rule and reg and DEQ. But if you have on-lot septic tanks, there's really no – it requires a study. But then again, it doesn't specify what the study would be, what the results would be. If there were some negative PERC test that came out of the study, there's the commissioners would have the – option, I suppose, to deny it, but they don't have to deny it. And we've seen that in the past and with the small lot subdivisions with 35 acres or less. So that's, we need to do some work in that 35-acre area, and if this bill passes, we need to do some work in this area to make sure that cost shifting, one of the reasons we want to support this bill is because we think it cost shifts back to the public. Well, this In my opinion, the provisions in this bill do not prevent that cost shifting. If we have 20 people come together that's out on these 35 to 140-acre lots, come together and form a water improvement district, they can go to the Water Development Commission and cost shift that to the rest of us. Even if the permit could be issued even in with an adverse report that there wasn't any water there, or that the sewer on-lot sewer systems, septic tanks, were not appropriate. And now a question for the good chairman or for whoever. I have a question about on page 5 where it talks about that there must be a minimum access right-of-way of 60 feet to the subdivision. I guess my question is, if we have a parcel of land out there that's between 35 and 140 acres and does not have a 60-foot right-of-way to it, and if the owner of that property or the developer cannot, by mutual agreement, obtain a 60-foot right-of-way, there's no remedy for them to be able to subdivide that because it requires a 60-foot right-of-way, and the private road condemnation statutes will only provide a 30-foot right-of-way. So I assume by passing this bill, that will render these properties that don't have access to them unavailable for subdividing. Another point on page 7 where it talks about no public maintenance of specified streets or roads. Well, we can post all the signs we want out there, but as soon as government gets involved with the permitting process and regulating, I would submit to you that there's going to be a presumption that if the county put their blessings on this project and permitted it, that those people are going to be in someday and demand services. So we could put all we want in there and say we're not going to do it. I think the presumption is by providing a regulatory vehicle that there could be a presumption someday that we will still, through the public, have to do this. So, again, I'm not, have strong feelings one way or another, but I'm not sure we're quite there yet to accomplish what we want to do so that we don't cost shift these subdivision costs, to the public and keep them in with the developer. So thank you, Madam Chairman. And just something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Simlek. Would you like Representative Brown to respond to that question now? Okay. Go, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think that that those are good questions that have been raised. It's true today that there are pieces of land that have no access, and coupled with county subdivision regulations that require 45-foot wide roads. And the private road statute won't permit a private condemnation action for a road that wide. The most you can get under the private road statute is 30 feet, and that's something that some counties have worked. So that is a problem, and I think we recognize that, and we discussed it in committee. And as far as expectations of services, no matter what we do, we can, if we bottle this thing up too tight, I don't think anybody would be comfortable passing it. I think we have to start, and this is a start, and I think we recognize that over time these sections are going to have to be revisited, and they're probably going to be tightened up. But this is a budget session, and it is a lot to swallow just as it stands. It's a start. It's not a finish. And so we elected to do as much as we thought was doable this time and provide the framework for later sessions. But some of the questions, those questions that were raised right there, I believe, will require more deliberation than we have to give in a budget session.
Chairman Yellaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If I'm correct, I believe the county commissioners here have recently turned down a subdivision relative to water availability. Water, at least in the southeast corner of Wyoming, is pretty tricky, pretty touchy. So it seems to me that they have turned that down, and they've also required in some areas that fire protection have a tank and so forth. Now, these are not 35-acre subdivisions, but these are small acreage subdivisions. So the counties have done some things relative to water. Water is extremely important, at least down here. Cost shifting, yeah, it's going to come. I don't think there's any way to stop cost shifting, but we need to slow it down. We need to try and make sure that the roads are correct. that water is available or not available, and people need to know that. I think it's a terrible thing to go out and pay $1,100 an acre for a 40-acre parcel and go out there and agreed you ought to have a well before you do it, but find out that that water is not good and it can't be good. So these are some real problems with the standards for roads and so forth. Agreed. We probably need to look at that a little bit more. The demand for services, we've been told by one attorney that they can demand all they want. They can't get it necessarily. I don't agree with that. I think health and safety, if you move out there and you can't get out, you've got a sick person or you've got a child that's got to get to school, you can demand those services, and somehow somebody's got to make that work, and that's the cost-shifting part of it. People need to know before they move out there in the hinterland that those services just aren't available, and they better be aware of it. And that's what we're trying to do. Quite frankly, the horse has gotten out of the barn. He may be out of the corral, and he may be getting close to getting out of the second corral. Somewhere we have to put a halt to the abuses and try to help the county commissioners with some additional tools to abide by these abuses. And quite frankly, I know over in the mother county, there have been some abuses. You can't talk about folks that move in from the west and buy up large property, but they've created a problem, and that's why that particular county has gone to 640 acres. So there are some problems. We need to address them.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be quick. This bill is an attempt to make people that buy these more aware that there could problems could exist. But as far as cost shifting, it exists today, regardless of the size, regardless of the things that we do, and it will exist tomorrow. But this is to try and help put notices on plats, do other things to make people aware of this, and maybe it'll help control some of the cost shifting.
Representative Simlick.
Madam Chairman, at this point, I would move committee of the whole amendment number 2 to Senate File 11. This is a two-page amendment with appears to be quite complex. You've read it over. It's really quite simple. All this would do is to say that if we was to, before a county would opt into considering the regulation of land parcel between 35 and 140 acres, that let's just allow the people in that county to vote on that. It requires it's written into the amendment that there'd have to be 5% of the voters to have a petition. We don't need that. We don't need to complicate it at that point. I think the real question is, you know, do we want to give the stakeholders on this issue, which are really the landowners, an opportunity to help with the guidance to their county commissioners of whether or not they would like to enter into something like that. I guess another reason for maybe going to a voting system is that, you know, it would really provide an opportunity to have a public forum, particularly if we did it through petition, to visit with people, let them know what's involved in this regulating process, and I think you can get a lot more buy-in that way than just by having the county commissioner sign a resolution. You know, particularly in some of the counties out in the extreme, you know, the hither lands of this state, you know, particularly like my area, you know, if people have an opportunity to participate in the process, I think they have a lot better opportunity to buy in. And the third point, Madam Chairman, and I'll bring this to a close, is, you know, if, you know, it was a vote of the people that brought all of us to this body, and we didn't question their judgment then on that, so let's not question their judgment on this. For your consideration, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chairman, I think the bill as written allows maximum flexibility so that counties can have as much possible public input as they want. I mean, any county commissioners out there that are thinking about adopting a resolution along these lines certainly will want to engage the public in discussions, make sure that they're not stepping beyond what their constituents want. But the problem with the amendment is that in those counties where there is already an overwhelming consensus to move in this direction, and where people are crying out for the ability to implement these regulations, that then you saddle them with a whole new process, even though consensus has already been built. So I would submit to you that the bill allows public input, and the structure of it encourages public input, because the commissioner's job is certainly going to be on the line next time around when depending on what decisions they make. So I would encourage you to defeat the amendment. The bill as written allows maximum flexibility, and that's appropriate in this case.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I question the appropriateness of this amendment. I also question the motive behind it. This kind of thing isn't required for other aspects of our subdivision law in Wyoming. It's not even required for zoning. It just seems like, to me, like it's out of line compared to other election initiatives. Even if this does go through, there's still the right of referendum that the voters have. So I kind of wonder if this isn't targeted to render these regulations to be basically impotent and inert. So I, too, would urge the body to oppose this amendment.
Representative Brown.
And thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And may I say, those wise voters that elected us also elected those county commissioners. And they're subject to the same accountability that we are subject to. And I don't think they're going to do anything in the middle of the night. An example I can show of that is in the mother county, where the county, since the 640-acre rule went into effect, every county commissioner race and now there's been an appointment for an unexpired term, every county commissioner race, every county commissioner selection has inculcated into that a consideration about that 640-acre rule. So there's plenty of accountability. I don't think it's going to be done in the middle of the night. I think the election is just unduly complicates it. And I would urge you to vote against this amendment and leave the judgment about how this ought to be done and the amount of public involvement and public accountability that's going to be involved to those elected officials.
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 2 has failed. Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I had a question on page 2. Line 16, the provisions of 185306 and 185315 should not be applicable to a subdivision of land under this section. 185315 says, if any board has or enacts resolutions or regulations which impose requirements on subdividers or subdivisions which are more restrictive than the provisions of this article, the authority to enact such local resolutions or regulations being hereby granted, the local provisions are not superseded by the provisions of this article, which means locally you can adopt restrictions that are more strict than this statute. But by allowing that not to apply, you are saying that the local provisions are superseded by the provisions of this article. In Park County, we have a section of Park County where we have 40-acre minimums. You can't divide below 40 acres. And that was zoning that was created in consultation with the landowners who wanted 40-acre minimums in that area. And so if you had 40-acre minimums and somebody came in with a 35-acre exemption attempting to split, and you didn't have the protection of 315, how would that work? We would just be saying that your local zoning, if it conflicts, is superseded by this bill.
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairwoman, I think the answer to that is this isn't zoning. This only prescribes those instances in which subdivision regulations for the subdivision of land are applicable. It doesn't regulate when land can be subdivided. Zoning does that, I don't think there's anything in this bill that is inimical to zoning.
Representative Gingrey? Did you ask me?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a curiosity question about, I think the committee's done a great job drafting this bill, and they've worked on it for the last 2 years, and in the end, I'll probably vote for it. But just a question. I went back and pulled the case that started all this in 2004, case out of Natrona County, where Natrona County was already doing all of this, and a developer said, you don't have the authority to do this. And so they went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court told Natrona County they couldn't do it. And the Supreme Court made the distinction. They said that the county has the authority to regulate the use of the land, but not the division of the land, meaning subdividing, and that the legislature had not granted that authority beyond 35 acres. But it says Natrona County had the full authority to regulate the use of the land pursuant to its zoning regulations. And the Supreme Court goes on to talk about the 35 acres, and they seem to imply that the easy fix here was to just switch the 35 to a larger number and just leave it up to those counties that wanted to regulate above the 35, they could. And it seems as though the fix would have maybe been a one-sentence bill that just said, those counties that want to do it, they can do it, and those that don't want to, they don't have to. I'm just curious why we got to the point of having such a lengthy bill when it potentially, if you follow the Supreme Court opinion, we could have maybe done this in one sentence.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. There are two cases. There's a companion case. There's the Natrona County case, and there's a Converse County case. What those cases discussed was trying to zone property without zoning. And what those cases said was you can't enact subdivision regulations and then use them as a zoning plan. And in those cases, and as a matter of fact, the spouse of the representative from District 3 was the attorney who carried that case in the Supreme Court, the companion case. So the Supreme Court said, if you're going to have regulations and you're going to use them for zoning, then call them zoning and do a plan. And you have to do a comprehensive land use plan. You have to identify the areas, the density, the uses, and all those sorts of things. And once those are done and the county is zoned that way, then you can apply the regulations, but you can't do it backwards. You can't write regulations and then try to go out and use those as a de facto zoning of the county. And so that's sort of different than what we're doing here. What we're doing here is we're not saying that we're zoning. This bill does not restrict anybody from subdividing their land. What it does restrict is how that subdivision is done. And if one is going to subdivide one's land, if there's zoning involved, you're going to have to look at the zoning and see whether the subdivisions that you intend to create are permissible, and mostly in terms of density and land use. And if they're permissible under the zoning plan in terms of density and land use, then you have to say, okay, I can do a subdivision under the zoning. Now, what am I required to do in the subdivision? That's where the regulations kick in that are in this statute. Then I've got to think about my infrastructure. And that's basically, I think, in the end, isn't that what this is? This is an infrastructure bill, and it says, okay, I'm going to do the subdivision. Now, how much infrastructure am I going to be required to put in? And we're going to do some slimmed-down infrastructure for the exempts on the splits until we work our way past the splits, and then we're eventually going to have the full amount of infrastructure that's mandated by this bill in any subdivision that's done. So you can subdivide your land, and this doesn't stop you. It does mandate that if you're going to do subdivision, there's some infrastructure requirements that come with that. And we all know that infrastructure is going to be built someday. The question is, where is the expense going to lie? And what this tries to do is exactly what was mentioned in the State of the State speech, to get away from this shifting and not allow a developer to do a subdivision, grab the money and run, and shift all the infrastructure expense down the line to the county commissioners and to the Water Development Commission. And this is a start, and it's a work in progress. I admit there were some good issues that were raised, but it's a start on saying if you're going to do a subdivision and you're going to create an infrastructure obligation, then it's going to couple the infrastructure obligation with the creation of the subdivision so that it carries its own weight as it goes. I hope that helps and not hurts, Madam Chairwoman, and I on and in favor of the bill.
Is there any further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, back on that point, page 2, lines 16 and 17, it says it shall not be applicable to a subdivision of land under this section. When you identify minimum acreages in your zoning, you are indicating that you can't subdivide below that minimum. And then you have subdivision regulations. So the term shall not be applicable to a subdivision override the zoning that might be more restrictive than this bill?
Representative Brown.
Chairwoman, I don't think so. I think what it says is that you, in these areas between 35 and 140 acres, you can't, and that was some protection because the landowners are fearful of what we're doing to them here. And we want to take a small step. We're trying to be as equitable about this as we can and take the smallest step that we can take to address the problem to start, and let's see how it cuts. And there are a lot of landowners out there who are very fearful of what we're doing and whether we're destroying the value of their property and exactly how this is going to impact them. So with that exemption out of there, I take it that though the county may, on 35 acres and down, the county may have restrictions more strict than the statutes on the large lots between 35 and 140, we take away their ability to be more restrictive than the statute that we're passing. And that is just a way not to throw these landowners into a total panic on their side and on our side to be sure that we're not unduly hurting somebody and start easing our way into this thing. And I predict that this body will talk about this issue from now on. I don't think it'll ever stop.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, if 3412102 requires a plat for every division of more than three, and if you divide into 10 100-acre lots, you've got to file a subdivision plat. Why don't we just require disclosures in that regard, or in that way, with regard to roads, sewers, those types of, and water rights, that then it would be fairly difficult to sell a parcel if there were an adequate disclosure, and would then, you know, I would think drive a developer to try and do what they could to, you know, comply with what we propose as regulations. Was there discussion in the committee as to that method of approaching this problem?
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairwoman, there was not any discussion. I think it could have been put here. I think there was probably another way to skin this cat. It didn't come to us from the Senate that way, and they are the cat skinners.
Is there any further discussion on this? All dogs and cats aside, question being called, all those in favor of Representative Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 7, recommended do pass. Senate File 8, recommended do pass. Senate File 48, recommended do pass. Senate File 41, recommended do pass. Representative Simpson moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Senate File 18, recommended do pass. Senate File 21, recommended do pass. Senate File 39, recommended do pass. Senate File 43, recommended do pass. Senate File 57, recommended do pass. Senate File 11, amended.
Representative Berger.
And further amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
And now, Representative Berger.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Congratulations, Representative Berger. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 171. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, Fuel Tax Distributions, Ayes 30, No 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 172. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 7, Real Estate Commission Authority, Ayes 30, No 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message number 173. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 14, Nursery Stock, Ayes 30, No 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 174, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 16, Special Districts Elections. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 175, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 21, Commercial Vehicle Fees. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 176. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 25, School Building Plan Review Exception, ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 177, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 31, Medical Safety Event Reporting, ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 178. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 45, Film Incentive Program Authority, ayes 26, noes 4, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 179. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 64, State Auditor Employee Criminal Background Checks, ayes 24, no 6, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 180. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 71, Emergency Fire Suppression Account. Ayes 24, no 6. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 181. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 59, TANF Amendments. Ayes 17, noes 13. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 42 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Alden, Begbie, Buchanan, Dockstader, Gingrey, Mercer, Olson, Shepperson, Throned. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 66 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Alden, Begbie, Buchanan, Dockstader, Olson, Shepperson, Throne. No, Gingrey, Mercer. Signed, Representative Buchanan, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 19 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Edmonds, Escobel, F., Hammonds, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Korberg, Stewart. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-referral Senate File 19 from your committee number 9 to committee number 2.
Without objection, Senate File 19 is re-referred from committee number 9 to committee number 2. Committee announcements. Chairman Elloway.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Thursday, tomorrow at noon, House 18. We will discuss Senate File 26 engrossed, business entities, registered agents.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, will meet tonight shortly after adjournment in room 302, where we will take up Senate File 22 engrossed, school facilities amendments, Senate File 71, Hathaway Scholarship Program, success curriculum, and Senate File 38 engrossed, People First Language.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet upon adjournment tonight to continue consideration of Senate File 40 engrossed Uniform Trust Code amendments, and will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. to consider Senate File 65 Post-Conviction Relief Petitions, DNA Evidence, and Senate File 5 Peace Officers, Probation, and Parole Agents.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, will meet shortly after adjournment in room H17 to hear Senate File 62, Emergency Medical Technicians, Senate File 36, Public Health Emergency Volunteers, and Senate File 13, Mental Health Professionals Practice Act Amendments.
Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment to discuss Senate File 84, Fireman's Pension Account Amendments, Senate File 83, Retirement Rehired Retirees, and Senate File 88, Engrossed Inmate Medical Parole.
Chairman Samuelson.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room H11 to discuss the following bills. Senate File 58, State Trust Land Management Account, Senate File 27, County Nuisance Abatement Authority, Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Construction.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm privileged of the floor.
Please proceed.
I'd like to thank everybody who's sent in their checks and filled out their forms for the Race for the Cure. If there's some still out there, I'd appreciate getting them so we can kind of get a wrap on this thing before you get to the short rows. And then I wanted to remind everybody of the legislative prayer breakfast tomorrow morning in the Egg and I at 6:30.
Chairman Philip.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two appropriations will meet Thursday, February 28th at 7 a.m. in room 204 to discuss the following bills. And this is a re-referred bill. Senate File 63, Natural Resource Large Project Funding. Senate File 53, Engrossed Common School Reserve Account Funding. I believe that's a direct referral. Senate File 87, Capitol Building Restoration, re-referred from travel. And then, Mr. Speaker, the Joint Conference Committee on Senate File 1, the budget bill, will meet with the like committee from the Senate on adjournment today. And again at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 28th.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, for my second time, the your committee number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in H-17 to consider Senate File 85, Healthcare Reform Pilot Project.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd request re-referral of Senate File 42 to Appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 42 is re-referred from Committee Number 1 to Committee Number 2. Representative Brown.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, the Cowgirls are playing tonight at 7 o'clock, and they're playing a week from tonight at 7 o'clock. And that is their last two games for these girls, and I must say, I think like a lot of people have never particularly been a fan of women's basketball, but I have become a fan about the last 3 or 4 years as I've watched them. And you have to understand that it's women's basketball. It's a different game, but it has its own set of subtleties that are very interesting. And I think in the history of our university, they're going to go down within the context of their own game as one of the most special teams our university's ever had. So there are two more opportunities to see them. If anyone would like to ride with me, I'm going. And as I say, they play again a week from now. The game a week from now will be a barn burner. It's against a university to the west that typically engenders a lot of foul language and all that stuff. So. And the one tonight's against the university to the south that sometimes engenders the same thing. So I hope you'll think about watching them at least one of those times.
Committee number 13, the Appreciation of Cowboys and Cowgirls, Representative Thompson. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Further announcements. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A general file for tomorrow will be Senate File 25, Senate File 30, Senate File 76, Senate File 81, Senate File 66, and Senate File 28. Again, 25, 30, 76, 81, 66, and 28. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Thursday morning at Thursday morning, February 28th, 2008 at 10 a.m.
You have heard the motion. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed to it signify by saying no.
No.
We stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 28th.